It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
Good morning, guys. Hello? Okay, evidently they've called in, but for some reason we don't hear them. So eventually we're going to hear from Laurie and John. And what they're going to be discussing today is their review of the, let me just think, let me get to, it's a Hyundai Sonata Hybrid. And sounds like a fantastic car. I think you'll really enjoy it. And then, of course, you could see their review online at the Yonkers Tribune. And really very compelling. So that's going to be our first guest, the two of them, actually. And then Gabriella Metzl is going to join us at 10:30. I see they're back on, so let's see if we can pull them in. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Can you hear us?
Now I can. Couldn't hear you before.
Oh, good. Yep. Good morning. How are you?
We were actually on before. You just couldn't hear us.
It's modern technology.
Couldn't hear you. No, I saw that you were on. I just couldn't hear you.
How are you, Hezzy?
Thank God. All right. I'm glad that you guys are on today. Are you also raining down there? Because we're going to be getting an unbelievable storm today.
But it's been days that it's been raining down here, Hezzy. Days.
It hadn't been storming, and it hasn't been windy or bad or any of that.
That's not true, Johnny. We've had torrential rain.
Well, yeah, but it hasn't been like thunder and lightning and whipping winds and all that.
Oh.
But it's just been raining. Just
really hard.
Lots and lots and lots of rain.
And they've been saying, in fact, actually, honey, we had a tornado warning.
That
you must have slept through.
Hey.
Just the other day. and every day it said lightning and thunder.
But we haven't really seen or heard any.
But anyway, this
but
is...
But it did rain so
raining
hard.
Like that, how were you able to do the review on the car? I mean, is that, you know, you didn't get waterlogged on the road, I
hope.
Do you
think nothing stops Johnny?
Hey, we have a garage. See, I can get in the car, pull
That's
out of the garage,
true.
Drive around, not get out, of course, drive around for a while, check the car out, and drive back into the garage and not get wet. That's
but
the only way I'd do it.
But,
I like
Johnny,
that.
If you get wet, you act like the Wicked Witch of the
I'm
West.
Melt. I can't get wet.
You can't take it. He cannot stand getting wet. Yesterday, he walked to the end of our rather long driveway to pull back the garbage cans from the Tuesday pickup by the trucks, and it was raining, and he came back, and he had such a sour ball expression on his face because he was wet, and he went right into the bedroom to change because he can't stand wet. It's just
I hear you.
This is my great outdoorsman husband. But no, it's not that, Johnny wanted to know why I wasn't really into the car this week. And then I realized when I got in to drive it yesterday, I had only driven it once before all week long.
I think you drove it first. Weren't you the first one?
But it was just around the neighborhood. And I think that my mindset's just been this lockdown mindset, although really our lives have not changed in the least. Except for not being able to go to restaurants, but that's going to change as of Friday night, right, honey?
Yeah.
We're going to go out to a reopened inn in the village, and this
fantastic.
with a new Italian restaurant that's supposed to be really, really good. So
it'll be our first experience in social distancing restaurant dining.
Yeah. How do you eat with a mask on? That's what I want to know.
You
don't. You know what I've heard a lot of places, what they do is they've created for tables, they've created plexiglass dividers very, very high up. So when you're seated, you're able to see, I think, up to three more people from your position. So I guess it's for a table of four. And it's very, very interesting that they come up with this. But we'll see how it goes. I just hope.
Wow.
I don't know how a restaurant's going to be able to make it, though.
How does this work? There's a waiter with a mask. He's carrying plates that do not have masks on them, nor are they underneath.
Well, we don't know that. They might be under cover of some kind.
Well, let's say they aren't. And he's walking past bunches of people with these plates and a a molecule of something. I mean, really, this is getting to
be covered. Yeah. It should be covered, though. So most likely,
well, we'll be able to report on it next week. We'll be able to tell you
okay,
what happened.
Make sure you don't,
in our restaurant.
You don't get anything. And you know, they say also that it really isn't, you know, one molecule of whatever this thing is. It's not so easily absorbed into the system.
Yeah.
And they're learning a lot more, and we were more scared before, and I guess we needed to be cautious. Better, more cautious than less cautious, and hopefully we'll all be coming out of it pretty soon.
Yeah, I think so. I really do. I think we're moving in the right direction. You know, people are, and,
I hope so.
And to be honest, people are frustrated and they're tired of this, quite honestly. And
well,
it's
also, you've got to make a living.
Well, yeah, and somebody said, you know, well, this, the doctors that did the herd thing, the herd
mm-hmm.
herd immunization. And, you know, that,
right.
I think people are starting to, well, you know, I read
but
all these
But that didn't
statistics.
Work very well in Sweden. They're having a resurgence. So,
yeah, but
you
what
don't
is
know
the
who's
percentage?
Right.
Of,
you know,
oh, of course not.
Who
of
knows?
Course you don't. That's, I mean, you get mixed messages every day, you know.
It all comes down
That's
to
true.
One thing, and I believe it was Franklin Delano Roosevelt who said, there is nothing to fear but fear itself.
I will say this
and
about
also
statistics.
Disease.
And P.S. And yeah.
I will say this about statistics. In North Carolina, can't speak for other states, won't even try, but in North Carolina, 63% of the COVID deaths are directly coming from nursing homes. We don't have, I mean, you know, truthfully, North Carolina. I mean, again, Moore County has 100,000 people, and we have 200 cases. This is nothing, you know, really. And truthfully,
well,
in
the
our
problem,
county,
the problem with senior this is the problem with senior living or senior
yeah.
homes is that it was never built to protect from this sort of thing because people
right.
used to just be rehabilitated. They weren't usually sick, but they fell sick while they were there. Because their children or relatives visited them, and
right.
the it's a communal living system. You may sleep in your own bed, of course, but when it comes to having breakfast, lunch, and dinner, everybody comes to the same dining room. You get one infection, and before you know it, everybody gets it.
Well,
and
if one nurse has it,
let's not forget too that government, whoever it was, whether local or whatever, the protective devices. So people
right.
didn't even know they were getting infected. They were coming down with it.
Sure.
It was a problem. It's
yep.
new.
Johnny, you were reading about, what was that, the Brooklyn Navy Yards? Was that it?
I don't know. What are you talking about?
The hospital that...
Oh, they spent $21 million to build a hospital. Of course, this is now... Hezzy, this is New York, you know, Brooklyn, I think.
Right.
It is. But they spent
right.
$21
Brooklyn.
Million dollars to build a hospital with 680 beds or something for all. It never got used. They took it all down. They never used it at all.
They took it down?
Just, yeah, they never used it.
Oh,
no one
it
ever
was.
One
of these inflatable things?
I have no idea. It was
probably if they took it, if they built it and then they took it down, it had to be one of these inflatable structures.
Yeah.
Look, you know, you can't. It's not laughable. The point is, if we didn't build it and we needed it, then what would we say?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You
know,
people never have it. They're never comfortable. You either plan or you don't plan. And this time they planned, but they planned inappropriately.
Right.
Because they didn't.
I don't think there's a way you could have won. And I do believe we're coming out of this thing, but I don't believe there's a way you could have won it. No matter what you do, it was going to be wrong. Somebody was going to say it was wrong. You either didn't do enough.
Oh,
or
you remember?
Go ahead.
You remember the U.S. naval ship, the Comfort?
Sure.
That came up from the Washington area, I think from Norfolk, and they docked in New York. They
yep.
ended up not needing it either.
Right.
It was all precaution.
Right. Yeah.
I do want to say that we received an announcement that this year's New York Auto Show is now totally canceled.
And oh, yeah, for sure.
It's not going to happen at all this year. It'll happen next year. Although I'm very excited to tell you that we're getting, Johnny doesn't even know this, we're getting a new Kia. It looks like a small SUV, and I cannot remember the name. It's coming this afternoon, and it's a 2021.
Oh, it's an SUV. That's the Seltos. Seltos, S-E-L-T-O-S.
That's it. How'd you know? God, you are so smart. That's what.
Hey,
that's
I try to keep up with, you know who I try to keep up with?
Yeah.
The driving me crazy crowd. It's not easy.
Hey, you're ahead of us, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you.
Oh, but
yeah.
I'm not getting a car to drive.
Yeah.
only through us are you getting a car to drive.
Absolutely. That's the way I live, vicariously.
Oh. Vicariously, that's right.
But this is the earliest we've ever got a model for next year.
Well, that kind of segues into talking a little bit about the car that we have this week, because Lori's saying we're getting a 2021, which is really, you know, new. But this one that
right
week, which is the Hyundai Sonata Hybrid, isn't even being sold, I think, until next month. It's like, and I wrote it when I did the column that I wrote up, but I wrote in there, we got a Maroni on it, but it didn't have a price on it, and it says to be decided. They didn't even price the thing. And when I went to the Hyundai website to look it up to get information on it and to see what they were selling it for, it was a 2019 prices. They had a 2019 hybrid. They didn't have the 2020 hybrid. So I had to do a lot more searching to find out what they were selling these things for. Which was a very pleasant surprise once you learn about the car to learn that it's, of course, it's not very expensive considering what you get. But anyway, this week we did drive the Hyundai Sonata, a four-door sedan, in the hybrid. And I'll talk about some. I'll let Lori jump in whenever she wants to. But first of all, I've never been, I don't know, overwhelmed by hybrids. I mean, I understand the purpose, and they're trying to move to electric cars and all these kinds of things. I understand it. But I've never been, you know, overly impressed, I guess, with them. The first thing I noticed about this car, though, was it's I don't know what they call it, a medium-sized car or whatever, but I thought it was a pretty good-sized car, pretty good-sized sedan. No problem getting in. Not going to hit your head. Plenty of leg room, plenty of seat room. Back seat, same thing. So first of all, a lot of your hybrids have lumps or narrow back seats or whatever to accommodate for these batteries. Well, this one was full size. Literally, for the people inside, easily get four adults in it. And then you go around and look in the trunk, and there's lots of trunk space. So then I'm reading about it, and one of the first things I learned is that they've figured out how to relocate the batteries so that you have a full-size sedan. And I thought, hey, that's cool, but I'm going to jump to the important thing. The thing that I really got out of this, which was just, to me, was so exciting about hybrids, is that now they have a solar panel in the sunroof. So literally when you're driving around, the sun is recharging your battery as well as the brakes. So isn't that cool? I didn't even see a place to plug it in anywhere.
But they don't have that in every vehicle. I think that's
no, this is
new. It's on
the Hyundai. Yeah, this is new technology. And I thought, of course, the thing that came to me was, and you remember this, Hezzy, I don't know whether Lori does or not, but Dick Tracy used to be in the newspaper. Every Sunday you read the newspaper.
Yeah.
We read the funnies, you know, the kids did.
Uh-huh.
And Dick Tracy was in there. And I always remember they had developed this, looked like a tube with these things that stuck out the side of it that gathered in the sun's rays, and it would make it hover and then move. And the statement was, the man who controls the sun controls the world. And I thought, look at what they're doing here. They're putting a solar panel on the roof of the car. That's new technology, and you know that once it starts, it's only going to improve. So I thought they said, well, it averages 2 miles, I guess, a day or something, you know, 700 miles a year, which is really nothing, and they admit that. But it's the whole concept. They have now figured out a way to use solar panels within the car to help the engine. And once you start that, it only progresses and gets better and better. So I that's what I said. Kudos to Hyundai. I thought that was pretty clever technology.
But not only that, the pickup for the car is really incredible. I mean, it really it's really responsive.
Mm. Well, the it's got the electric motor as well as the regular four-cylinder engine, which is fine in and of itself. But that electric motor, the you're gonna have to help me, honey. I forgot what's the electric car that's so powerful and
Tesla.
Yes, Tesla. Yeah. Tesla's the off the line is the fastest, and it does all of these things and that kind of, well, that's reflected in this Sonata. Lori's right. Its response is really good. A lot of that has to do with the electric motor in the car to get it going. And then, the other motor kicks in. Another thing that I noticed about this car and I really liked was there's some sort of really smooth transition. When you get out, pull out of the driveway, and you start, up the hill or whatever, and it goes from on the dash, it shows when it's charging the battery and when it goes to eco and then if it goes to power. And it generally just went from battery to eco. But you knew that the engine had kicked in, but it was so smooth you didn't hear any big sound change. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, wow.
To go from electric to the motor running, and you really don't notice much of anything. And it has a 6-speed transmission, smooth as silk. Didn't even notice when it was changing gears particularly. I'm telling you, Hyundai is really doing some front-end work for the future, I think.
Now, as far as sound is concerned, it starts up like a golf cart.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the purr of a golf cart engine. And also, it sings, the car sings, is the best way I can put it. When you're pulling into the garage or coming to into reverse, it starts to sing. I don't know how.
Well, what that is, it's reverse, really. But, on a lot of vehicles, you put it in reverse and it goes beep, beep, beep as you're backing up. As long as you got it in reverse, you're getting that beep. Well, you have that on the Hyundai. But if you're inside, you really don't notice it very much. And even outside, it's not real loud. But it is that sort of very light, and it's all, like Lori says, it's almost musical sound, but it tells you the car is in reverse. And then when you put it in forward, of course, that sound goes away. But it just, there's a lot, and I hadn't had that before on a car either.
Talk about the dash circles where when you make a right or a left turn, you can see what's on your right.
Yeah, we've talked about that before.
Yeah, I like
we've
that.
Seen it on. Yeah, we've seen that on other Hyundais, but it is really nice.
Psychedelic.
When you put on the left turn signal, there's two circles in the dash in front of the steering wheel. One would be where the speedometer is. The other would be like gas mileage and all those kind of, or whatever it's keeping up with in the car. Well, the one on the left, when you've done your left signal, that round circle becomes a camera that's looking down the side and to the back of the left side of the vehicle. Turn on your right-hand signal, it's a camera showing the right side and the back of the, toward the back of the vehicle. And when you're doing, and we talked about this before, but you're doing a tight turn into a parking space or you're doing a tight turn where there's a tree right next to the driveway, all of a sudden now you can, if especially you're backing up, you can see those things, how close they are to your car. And you wouldn't think about it, except we have friends who have big concrete planters right by the edge of their walkway, right next to the driveway. Well, if you're not careful, you're going to get too close to those planters, and you could open your door into one. Well, guess what? Now, by turning on the camera, which you can do, I can actually see how close I am and where those are in relationship to the side, to the passenger side of the vehicle. I thought, it's one of those cool things. I mean, it's just technology that they're adding to the vehicle. And what do you call that? When, it doesn't make the car run, doesn't make you get any better gas mileage, but it does add some sort of value to the car. It's a little bit safety, but it's a lot more just, I don't know, making you feel comfortable in knowing what you're doing in driving situations.
Mm-hmm.
Add-on value, I guess it's called.
Sense of security.
Yeah, a sense of security, right.
I don't agree with you about...
What?
I don't...
Well, there's a rarity, folks.
Well, this is a shocker now. It's a shocker.
Yeah, no kidding.
For goodness sake. I don't agree with you about...
I mean, it in a good way, Lori.
Yeah.
Nothing negative about that.
Sure I did.
Honey, you're wrong about... the seats. And it's not that my thigh muscles were screaming, but I found this car to be a little lower to the ground than other sedans. Am I wrong?
No, I didn't find it lower to the ground.
And it was my screaming thigh muscles because I felt that I had to kind of dip in to get into the seat and then adjust it.
Oh, okay.
Self-adjusting when you program it to be that way, but I did find it that part, but then again, maybe I just need to do some yoga or something to get those thigh muscles back in shape.
Not saying a word. No better than to comment on that one. So.
Well, I ask you though, Lori, were you able to move the seat up and down? Maybe it's
yes.
You know, like Johnny's always worried about bumping his head into the ceiling of the car, and maybe
no,
it was just in the wrong position.
No, it's an electronic control, and it's easy. It's easy to do. It's just that I felt that I had to get into the car a little bit to. But that's, I mean,
gotcha.
That may very well have been the very worst thing I've ever said about this particular manufacturer. It is amazing.
Wow.
What was the price that you found on it, honey?
Not there yet. Don't get me going. I don't want to give that away. Saving that for later.
You got 8 minutes. Big buildup.
Hey, I can do it. Talking about the car seats and, again, add-on value. It had the electronic controls for the seat, and you could set the seating for two drivers so that if Lori set it to fit her, which would generally be higher and closer than the way I drive, you know, I could set it, and then I just push the button for driver one or driver two, and the seat would go to the position that I had set for it, which I thought was really cool. It's got a Bose sound system.
Nice.
The things I loved about it were that it was very intuitive. You didn't have to have a college degree to be able to drive this car and run it. Adjustments, radio, all those kind of things, very obvious, right where you would expect to find them on a typical American car. Big things, you didn't have a gear shift.
Yeah, the push buttons.
You had push buttons. You had reverse, neutral, and forward, three. And then right to the left of those was a slightly bigger one with a P for park. So, I mean, you couldn't make it any simpler.
On the shifting, was it difficult to get used to that? You know,
yes.
Pushing the button?
Daniel say no, I say yes. That push button thing, any kind of a radical change, and this is a radical change in design for years. Anything like that, I'm just like a old dog, new tricks kind of thing. And it wasn't difficult, right about that. All you do is push the appropriate button and it's fine. But you have to think, it's a bit of a step because it's not like putting your hand on a shift. What do you think, Johnny?
Uh-huh.
I don't agree with you, honey. I thought it was easy. Yeah, I'm wrong, sure. Would it take some getting used to? Sure, because we're not used to that. But did I like it? Actually, I liked it. Two couple of reasons. One, now that whole area between the two seats and at the driver's right hand are nice and open. There's nothing in the way, especially they've created that area in front of what would have been the gear shift, which is now wide open, and you just slide your phone in there, it charges your phone, there's a place to put your keys, your sunglasses. You know, there's nothing to obstruct you reaching in and getting things or putting things away. I liked it. I liked the openness of the space. This one also had leather seats, heating and air-conditioned front seats.
Trunk space.
Yes, mentioned that. Lots of trunk space. Of course, it's got a sunroof, and of course, then you've got the solar panels in the sunroof, that kind of thing. And okay, here's the deal. Lot of car, really nice car, $33,500.
Fully loaded.
Fully loaded.
Wow.
And all the safety things, all the stuff that Hyundai is famous for, you know, recognizing traffic in advance, stopping you, backing up. Got to use that. Didn't mean to, but I got to use that. I was in one of the parking spaces in Pinehurst, and you park facing in at kind of an angle. And so I was going to back out, put it in reverse, and, of course, the camera comes on, and I start backing up. And I back up, and I get beep, 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 and it stops. And there's a car coming. You can just see it in the edge of the camera system. But it has already recognized that car was coming. It's probably coming a little faster than it should have been. But it wasn't going to let me back out in front of that car. Hey, that's cool stuff.
Wow.
That's what prevents accidents. So I thought that was great.
Wow.
But it's got that pedestrian awareness. You know, you're going through town and somebody steps out. It's gonna do its best to keep you from running into them.
Ooh.
Even it'll
answer
stop
a question.
Yeah.
When a vehicle has these extra items in it, especially from a safety perspective, do people's car insurance go down? Because it can avoid a lot of accidents like that, like you just mentioned.
Well, that's interesting. I'd never thought about that, and I'm sure the insurance industry doesn't want us to think about that, has he? Because
but I don't work for the insurance business.
I agree with you, but I haven't seen any emails that said, "Hey, you're driving a safe car. Let's see if we can help you." I don't see many companies doing that. It's sort of like, you remember when gas was glutted and it got down around here to like a dollar and something, very low, $1.39 a gallon, for example. You know, there's no place to go, but the gas is low. You don't see the gasoline company saying, listen, we'll give you a rebate. Just buy our gas and we'll send you back 25 cents a gallon. You know, that doesn't happen. So.
No, it
doesn't. Yeah. Anyway, I thought the... If you're looking for a sedan, I did think this was a practical vehicle for people who commute, especially. Mm. And immediately it came to mind because I used to live in Maryland, and I worked at a company that was up off of the Beltway. And I thought, gosh, this would have been a great car to drive as a commuter car. First of all, with the battery and the four-cylinder engine, you get an average of 47 miles per gallon, 51,
wow.
I think, on the highway, 45 around town. But 47 miles to the gallon. We got this car on a Thursday, and it said I could go, I don't know, 491 miles, let's say. Might have been more than that, but let's say 491. I drove it for 3 days. Like Lori said, she got in, took a little tour of it, but I got in. I had some things to do, errands to run, and went to the post office, went to the grocery store, went to all these things, ran around. I drove it for like 3 days. I get back in, and it says I can go 470 or 489 miles. It's like I'd only used 4 miles in all the running around that I'd done. Because the battery got charged, you know, and while I was driving around, and I'm getting this incredible gas mileage. So I thought, man, that would have made a great commuter car back when I lived in the Washington area, or if you lived in Atlanta, or one of any places where you work in or around the Beltway, and you're always commuting and those kinds of things.
So. It just dawned on me, since there's so much mileage capacity because of the you know, that you could resuscitate the battery while you're driving. So it may actually, because if you could travel 491 miles, let's say, on a charge, then it's very conceivable that we may not need to build out so many places to recharge. But I guess by the time more people buy these things, they probably will be able to do it inexpensively and quickly.
Well, I
maybe
think that's probably...
Yeah,
well, that'll be part of it, and it's like I was saying about the solar panels. Once that starts, they'll work on it to the point where you may be able to drive around during the day in the sunlight and completely recharge the battery while you're driving. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Sort of like plugging in your cell phone when it's still on. You plug in your cell phone, it charges up, regardless whether it's on or you're talking on it or what. The cell phone still charges up. Well, that same idea, if you're driving the car around and you're using the gasoline engine part of that time and the sun's down shining on the solar panel, why wouldn't it charge up the battery anyway? So I just think
I got one other question. I used to think that they had put the battery flat out from front to the end, and it was under the seating compartment. And so evidently that wasn't the case, but it should also lower the center of gravity, shouldn't it? When you have a vehicle like you're talking about now, so it must be better handling.
Yes, and I think you're absolutely correct. I think probably what Hyundai's did is somehow move it toward the back seat or underneath the back seat or in that area somehow so that you still have all the leg room and can still move the seat. But, yes, it does give it, because of the weight of the battery, the width of the car, and then the length of the car and its dimensions, it does give great handling characteristics. So,
Thanks, George.
Good night, Georgie.
is it good night, George?
Well, it's good night, Gracie. Good night, George. Our time is up.
Be well.
Time flies.
Hey, yes, I really enjoyed it today. Great
fun.
Yeah, I always have fun with you. So.
And we'll have more fun next week when we talk to you about the Kia. What is it, Hezzy? The Kia?
The Seltos. Seltos. Oh, and have a great dinner.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll have a lot to report on next week.
Take care of yourself.
That'll be good.
Take care.
Be well.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's bring in none other than Gabrielle M. Etzel. She's on the line. How are you, Ms. Etzel?
Good morning to you, sir. I am wonderful, better now that I'm talking to you. How about yourself?
Oh, you're so kind. You know, I don't know how you do that, but I'm just like melting now. But that's really great. You know, you came up with a great idea yesterday because wasn't exactly sure what to cover, but there are a lot of questions that have come about recently because the president had tweeted something on Twitter, naturally. Where else do you tweet? So it was on Twitter, and yet Twitter, and I didn't realize this, and I only was able to correct my error this morning when I looked at, you know, what was going on for today. I didn't need a reminder. I just wanted to reread it. So I was, not that there was that much there to read, but the bottom line is I was like shocked to see that I had inappropriately written that Twitter was commenting on everybody's comments or you know, whatever they had to say, but that's not the case. Evidently, they only commented on the integrity of the position that was being presented by the president. And that brought up in my mind, even forget what he said, but it brought up to my mind is, what is the definition of free speech?
That is an excellent question. That's exactly where I wanted to go with this today.
We've had our marital issues, you know, arranged through the show, I think maybe we're attuned better than before. That's a good thing.
We are in sync with each other. It makes it which makes our relationship better. It makes it better for our listeners. It's wonderful
you
for everybody. But
thanks
there,
for saying
there
that.
Is,
I didn't have the strength to say that.
going back to free speech, there is a significant problem with respect to free the questioning the ability of free speech, specifically on social media platforms, but more broadly speaking, also within general mass media and news media, there is a significant problem with the abuse of social media platforms for propaganda purposes. If we look into whether it's American spam bots or foreign agent spam bots, it is a significant issue.
Yeah.
And it is something that should be taken very seriously. There is a lot of misinformation out there. However, when information is coming from a credible source like the President of the United States, love him, hate him, or I don't know anybody who's indifferent towards him, but love him or hate him, he's a verified source, and that does become a problem. Now, with respect to Twitter's policies regarding cancellation or censorship, labeling things as misinformation, is more stringent in comparison to an agency like Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg, in response to all of this, recently came out making a statement that Facebook, because it is a platform, not a publisher, they don't censor to the same degree as Twitter does. Twitter's policies are much more stringent. And so that is encouraging. But it all boils down to the difference between a publisher and a platform. A platform takes no legal responsibility for the truth content that its individual users post, because the individual user becomes the actual publisher. The onus of truth legally falls upon the individual poster. Whereas if the institution is a publisher, well, yes, of course they have the right to censor the content that is posted on their site, because they take a legal responsibility for the truth claims, the actual validity of what is posted. So it's a multifaceted issue.
Okay. Well, I don't disagree with that, but I'm a little uncomfortable with the definition. If you publish, whether you're an online newspaper or a print newspaper, do you have to live under different guidelines as opposed to someone like Facebook's operation, where everybody who wants to comment there may do so, but aren't they also fomenting misinformation in case people are not giving the appropriate information, not because they're trying to maybe, manage the message. Some are and some aren't, or they may be ignorant of the issue. So whose responsibility is it to fix that, or is it anybody's responsibility to fix that?
That's the question and issue. That's the heart of the matter. And it comes down to, similar theme to what we talk about almost all the time on this show, whether we're going to regulate from top down or from bottom up. We're not repetitive. We're listening to every week.
Redundant.
No, it shows.
I'm only joking.
I know. It only shows that there are only so many principles that govern these types of policies, and that govern public policy making in general.
Right. Well, Zuckerberg has a really big empire and he's produced something very well.
Absolutely.
I guess, and it's everyone loves it. I personally couldn't care less, because there's too much stuff. I don't want to know who's wearing flip-flops and what restaurant they went to today or tomorrow and all that other stuff. But what's interesting is that he nuanced his responsibility, and I think it suits him. But the platform is what it is, and people are opinionated, and there's no challenge. I got a call yesterday because a day or two before, somebody in an op-ed article was presented, and they asked if I would publish it, and I thought that there were particular political leanings with regard to it, but I'm not the arbiter of what position people should take. I don't impose my feelings. I may feel, and I may be sensitive to something, and I may be aware or unaware depending on the circumstance and the subject matter. But somebody who said, they didn't care for the opinion piece. And it was and then they asked me to take down the article. I said, I'm not taking it down, because I really questioned why I should take it down. And then it was a political piece to some extent. And some people said, this isn't appropriate, or they have leanings going in the wrong direction, and. So I said, my responsibility is to give people a platform so that they can give expression to their ideas based on what's being discussed. But what
Absolutely.
You're saying is, if they don't abide by what you believe is your demeanor, your sensibility, and your conception of what and how things should be, then therefore they are not permitted. I said, well, you know, that doesn't work with me. And you know what my answer was? I said, it's your responsibility. If you don't like the particular tone, or you don't like the perspective, or you don't believe that the opinion is based on a credibility of some sort because you don't see that as credible, then it's up to you and your candidate to respond. And I said, one of the biggest problems I've seen is that people don't respond, thinking it will go away. And I've said to them, and I said this to these people, I said, if you want to make believe that this will go away because you choose it to go away, it won't go away. And the longer you leave it there, the longer it will replicate because you don't have the brains or the, excuse me, the cojones to go answer. You know, I was living.
And you have a right to be. Your platform and the majority of platforms, especially when we're talking about opinion editorials, is just that, to be able to express opinion. We've come to, and this speaks to the broader just general divide in the United States, we've come to the point where there are studies that corroborate this going back to 2018 and 2016. We no longer agree on the mechanism to determine what is fact and what is fiction. We
correct.
The idea of alternative facts, and that's wildly inaccurate. That causes even more division. It sows even more division. The matter comes down to we can form different opinions based upon the same facts, but a fact is true. It's not you can't interpret facts to make an individual truth. You can formulate an individual perspective, an individual opinion, but truth has to be objective if we're going to live in a sane world.
But, you know, it's very hard. I think we politicized positions to such an extent that that's
absolutely
become now our dogma because we're on Team A as opposed to Team B. Or there may be a Team C for all we know. But the bottom line is at the present, you know, when we look at our political framework, we have A and B, choose whichever side you want to be on. But the problem is we politicize to such an extent. But I guarantee you that even though I respect what you say, and you may respect what I say, the problem is that we come from different societal backgrounds. We have a different education. We're of different gender. We may be of different religions. We may be of different color. We may have different sexual proclivities, however you want to define it. And what we think are facts, by our own capacity to inculcate what we know into the situation. If you're an ignorant fool, not you, but if someone's an ignorant fool, they may not be able to come to a different conclusion than I, and I'm not saying I'm the smartest one in the room, but I'm not that stupid, and therefore I'm informed in a different way. But somebody else who may have a different perspective may be just as well informed and have a different outcome and belief system into what the issue is. So how do we define the differences? I don't know.
Well,
so what is free?
Well, it's not necessarily even defining the differences that's really the important. What's important is being able to make compromise, and on other issues
come to some sort of
consensus, or be able to at least engage in a dialogue. I'm not even looking for compromise at this point, and I've seen there are so many political problems. We just need to be able to have a rational dialogue about it, and that's the first.
Well,
step.
You know, I think that's where you're right. You're 100% right. We don't even need to agree. We just need to be respectful of each other's position. We can even challenge each other's position, and explain what we believe and why we believe it. Problem is, people are terse. They're too short with their explanation of their position, and you know, they come up with some attitude, well, that's the way it is, and you can't change that. No, you can't. Yes, you can. And just what was from 50 years ago doesn't mean it's good today. We learned that with COVID-19, didn't we?
Well, exactly. It doesn't, just because what has worked in the past doesn't mean that it's going to work in the future. But at the same time, you have to be able to learn from the past. You have to be able to understand what was, and that's another step that's missing if we're just talking in broad general terms. But going back to Trump's tweet for a few minutes. So the main tweet that started this whole uprising and this question of free speech in general was discussing the idea of mail-in ballots, of requiring just only mail-in ballots instead of in-person polling. And he used the phrase saying that mail-in ballots were substantially fraudulent. And he continues, and he's continued with this rhetoric for quite a long time. Now, the fact of the matter is, the majority of fact-checking information, it hasn't taken into account that yes, there is a slight according to at least an NPR article and a couple of others, that there are slightly more incidences of fraud through mail-in ballot systems. It's not just in states, it's also for other national elections, absentee ballots and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, so he, to be labeled, that lends credibility to Trump's idea that he's being labeled as misinformation, mainly because of his proclivities. Now,
right.
Trump's reaction to Twitter is also wrong and is also a attack on free speech. He's claiming that he's going to try and take big action against Twitter and those types of just kind of general vague threats that anybody in power can do when they are slapped down by an organization outside of their wheelhouse. But government retaliation against this platform censorship is not the right way to go. That's even more of a degradation of free speech because you're specifically attacking a business for coming out against you. It's a double-edged sword here. If Twitter is taking more of the role of the publisher that has the right to determine what content is posted on its website, then they do have the right to silence whoever they want to if they're going to take on that role. Now, that means that as a general public, we have to determine whether or not we still want to use that website, which, by the way, I do choose to use Twitter, and you can follow me at UnvarnishedGME whenever you want to, if you would like. But that's, and I'm also, maybe I'll try this weekend to see how many tweets I can post before I get shut down. That would be fun. But so to a certain degree, it does fall on the individual. But abusing government power to censor a business is just as wrong as the business trying to censor individual posters.
Well, I concur with your conclusion. It seemed it was almost like a meltdown moment for him. However, I do respect the fact that we have been polarized, maybe in the last 10 years more so than ever before. Maybe only in the last 5 years, we've been polarized to such an extent that we don't hear the other side. We demean the other side. We denigrate them. Whoever that other side is, if we're not on that team, you know, it's like being for the Boston Red Sox or the New York Yankees, and we'd fight to the death for that. But that's just the game. But you know, this is not a game. This is politics, and it seems like it could be a game, but it's going to be our life into the future. But what I've noticed in the politicking is that instead of espousing what we believe, whoever we are, whatever team you belong to, we don't have that. We just have finger-pointing, demonizing allegations, accusations of the other side and I don't hear a valid perspective or a vision for how we're supposed to go from where we are now to that other place. And we don't sell that vision, and by not selling that vision and not hearing of a vision that will deliver us, you know, this is not Mount Sinai, you know, so I don't know if we're going to get another delivery from the good Lord, but the bottom line is we need a vision. We need a plan, and we need to coalesce somehow. It's not going to be a kumbaya moment, but we need to come together for our nation and even the world to some extent. But number one, America first, you know. I know that sounds like a MAGA thing, but it's not. I think that every nation is really self-serving, and then it becomes a question of how they manage, just even like in any relationship. How do they manage with other nations? So I don't know where we're going.
The
nation is lost.
Absolutely, the nation is lost, and we've been lost for quite a long time. We've been stuck in the wilderness, and I would disagree with you that it goes back even further than 5 years of this political division. It's probably closer to it might be closer to 20 years if you look back at if you look
really?
Even further before. Well, what started the Tea Party movement? And I know that's really
true.
Came to a head in 2012.
Right.
And that really
right.
came to a head in 2012, but there had been so much unrest before then. And to a certain degree, we could trace it back to conflicts with over George W. Bush in invading Iraq and Afghanistan. We could go
mm-hmm.
back to the Bill Clinton impeachment and the politicization of the impeachment
right.
process. And we could go back even further to Watergate even and you know, be able
mm-hmm.
to pick apart the pieces of the dissolution of trust in the political system, trust in the establishment from Watergate. So it goes back, the seeds have been sown for such a long time. You can even go back even further if you want to take it to the dwindling of the FDR administration and the FDR New Deal era,
uh-huh.
where we started to move away from, we started to entrench our government, excuse me, started to entrench itself more in social policy instead of dealing with economic issues. So there's a plethora of places that you could pinpoint and say there's a problem here, then this problem, and then it creates a snowball effect. So it's
well,
so
does that mean,
this problem is much deeper.
Go ahead.
I
agree with all those different, you know, situations that you bring up. So does that mean, in a sense, then, if we're looking at the last 60 years, practically, maybe even
sure.
a little more, if we look at all that time frame from, I guess, from the time of FDR onwards, so I guess it's before the war, it's now about 70 years, have we
mm-hmm.
been on the edge in America to the point where our politicians have not appeased the populace in a way that they are quiet or quiescent, and the problem is that there's a revolution, a smoldering revolution in the country because we can't come to terms with one another? I mean, I don't understand how we're going to come together. We're so divided.
I wholeheartedly agree with you, and what's worse, what troubles me more is the fact that people, there have been numerous theories, numerous studies that people don't necessarily go to take up arms in a revolution or even take up arms in a political revolution rhetorically, unless there
right.
is some form of unless there's some form of desperation. People, if we're going to assume
mm-hmm.
that people are as they say, maximizing their utility, looking for their own benefit, then they don't take up a fight just for ideology alone. They don't take up a fight just for
uh-huh.
the realm of ideas. There has to be some sort of material consequence for most people to engage in this type of action.
Mm-hmm.
And we currently are because of this pandemic, so all of these issues have been bubbling under the surface. But because of this pandemic, we are in a situation where there is increasing desperation. when there's increasing desperation, there's increased reaction to potentially bad circumstances. We have that's what causes the proclivity of riots. That's what increases civil unrest. So the new jobless numbers, as every Thursday, the jobless numbers for last week are posted every Thursday. There's an additional 2.13 million people unemployed as of last week. It was projected to be slightly under that. That means that there's greater than 40 million people since the pandemic shutdown began who are now unemployed. Mm-hmm. The GDP numbers for the first quarter, which only included March, so we're down by 5%. So just from March, it was the only month in the first quarter where we were starting to experience effects of a shutdown. They're projecting for the second quarter, which ends in June, an estimated annualized 40% decline in GDP. And so they're expecting a rebound in the third and fourth quarters, but that significant of a drop is an absolute economic catastrophe. Now, one more startling thing.
Sure.
The people who have applied for unemployment, only 37 out of 100 eligible workers for unemployment have actually been able to navigate the process successfully. So we have essentially over 60% of unemployed workers are not getting the benefits that they are legally entitled to. There's an extra strain. So it's not even just that the numbers are bad and there's still time to recover. If we can't actually get the recovery into the hands of people, there is going to be unrest at a certain point in time.
Well, I think that's what the present administration or any administration would want to somehow quell, because even the president, I would tend to think that he wants to win another
of
round.
Of course.
But the thing that I find interesting then is that when I'm trying to look and hear the chatter between Republicans and Democrats. And as I pointed out before, the Democrats are just castigating the president. They've got nothing good to say about him. And there's no legitimacy to anything he says as far as they're concerned. But interestingly enough, it was under his administration that they passed the bill to send people money, because we can print our own money. So it's no big deal if you print up $1 trillion. You just do it, and the point is that's the way it works. I mean, if we were Argentina, we couldn't do that. But the thing that's interesting is it conceivable that someone like a Republican president, as in Donald Trump, who knows that the Democrats want a stimulus package for the public interest, and they're on the record for doing that, and yet the Republican Senate has said no, or they've been not on board quite as much. If the president can convince the Senate to pass a second stimulus package, don't you think that the president just won?
Well, it depends upon what we're defining as winning. There's so much that
election.
there's
election.
election. Winning the election. That's a strong question. It really depends upon. First of all, we're not just on the second stimulus bill. We're on, I think, they're working on bill number four, so four or five at this point. So
but I'm talking about money to the
down.
People, to the public,
but
big corporate structures.
No, but of course you also have to consider just getting a bill signed and getting a bill through doesn't mean that it's actually working. That's the real key. If you can't, if there's no connection between what's going on in Washington and what's going on on Main Street, then that's where you're going to start developing even more political problems. And that's where you're going to start. So unless there's actually some mechanism to get paychecks into the hands of people, then that's the problem. Whether or not we're dealing with what should happen, if that's the right policy, if that's the right way to go, that's mm-hmm. beside the point for this question. Mm-hmm. If the American voter can't see that there is some sort of end, what's in it for me, then that's ultimately going to punish him in the ballot box.
Yeah, absolutely.
If there is a ballot box, unless we're mailing in ballots.
Well, that's true. But you know, that one thing you spoke about the ballot again, I forgot to mention it, is that I don't know if you live in a community like Yonkers, for example. In Yonkers, we have cemeteries, I guess like everybody, they have cemeteries.
Mm-hmm.
But we have people, when it comes to mail-in ballots, they go off to the cemetery and they write people's names and then they send it out as a ballot. You do that too where you're from? Oh, I didn't know.
Well, I mean, we don't.
I thought we were quite unique in Yonkers doing it that way, because we've won elections that way. I mean, depending on what side you're on.
Sure. No, but
some are more proficient at it than others.
The fact of the matter is we can't. So getting back to the whole thing that started this debate, we can't get back. We can't ignore the fact that there is voter fraud, and there's going to be voter fraud no matter what system that we try and use. But the real issue mm-hmm. is we can't silence people for pointing out these potential problems. And that's what I.
Well, I guess maybe CNN's reporter Acosta, he's not wise enough to know the way things really are. You know, I'm getting tired of his badgering the president rather than to come up with some lucid questions as well. I don't know what to tell you. Maybe I'm just disgruntled old man.
You have the stomach to watch the press conferences. I can't anymore.
5 seconds.
Oh, my goodness.
5 seconds. It's enough for me.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, anyway, we should tell people about the Unvarnished blog. So if you want the truth,
absolutely.
You can read the Unvarnished blog. And it's easy to get to, isn't it? Just the Unvarnished blog, that's it?
The Unvarnished blog.
Truth,
and it's
the way I saw you write it.
The sanctuary
right.
for the truth. That's where in this era of misinformation and insanity, but come to the Unvarnished blog, and there's a plethora of content there for you.
There is. You know, what really impressed me, and we didn't have time today because of, you know, the tweeting that goes around, but you had mm-hmm. a great article published about 2 weeks ago called New Rules for the Old College Try, COVID-19 and the Crisis of Higher Education. That was a brilliant article, I want you to know. So
Why,
very,
thank
very
you,
well
sir.
Done.
Thank you.
Really
I appreciate
so
it.
Everybody should read it.
Everybody
right.
should. I'll tweet.
Oh,
I should tweet out
enough
another
is
link.
Enough.
Thank you very much, Hezzy. Always good to talk with you.
All the best to you. Thank you for making the time. I appreciate it. Be well.
Bye, Hezzy. Bye.
Bye. Okay, let's see. Well, that was really good with Gabrielle M. Etzel from the Unvarnished blog. Let me go back to our studio screen if I can get my act together. And where are we? Here we are. And what we'll do is we'll take a quick commercial break. And then when we're back, we'll cover some international news that you might
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome, equipped with a digital camera and a steno pad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
Welcome back. Now, in case you want to reach out to the Yonkers Tribune, we hope you would. The number, they've got one number now for
every modality to reach out to them. You've got the office number, the cell contact, the text number, and the voicemail. It's all the same number, 347-415-4326. So 347-415-4326 for office, cell, text, and voicemail capacity. And so let's cover what's been going on an international stage as well as the local stage. I first want to come up with what's going on with respect to Hong Kong. Evidently, Mike Pompeo says that Hong Kong is no longer warrants of its favorable trading terms under U.S. law. So he said that he had certified on Wednesday to Congress that Hong Kong no longer warrants its special treatment under U.S. law in the same way that applied when the territory was still under British law before July of 1997. So in a statement, Pompeo said that China's plan to impose new national security legislation on Hong Kong was, quote, only the latest in a series of actions that fundamentally undermine Hong Kong's autonomy and freedoms, end quote. And then continuing, he said, no reasonable person can assert today that Hong Kong maintains a high degree of autonomy from China, given facts on the ground. After careful study of developments over the reporting period, I certified to Congress yesterday that Hong Kong does not continue to warrant treatment under United States law in the same manner as U.S. laws were applied to Hong Kong before July of 1997. It is now clear that China is modeling Hong Kong after itself, he added. The Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act approved by the U.S. Congress and President Donald Trump last year required British colony retains enough autonomy to justify the favorable U.S. trading terms that have helped it maintain its position as a world financial center. Under it, officials responsible for human rights violations in Hong Kong could be subject to sanctions, including visa bans and asset freezes. It now falls to Trump to decide to end some, all, or none of the privileges Hong Kong currently enjoys. Trump said on Tuesday that the United States was working on a strong response to China's planned national security legislation for Hong Kong, and it would be announced before the end of the week. So it's only Thursday. There's still till tomorrow, and you never know if they've been able to finalize that particular perspective. Major problem here in the United States. Minneapolis protesters are calling for the arrest of the police who killed the handcuffed black man. Well, it seems that demonstrators gathered yesterday for a second night of protest over the killing in the United States city of Minneapolis of a handcuffed black man by a policeman who held him to the ground with a knee on his neck. As dusk fell, police formed a human barricade around the third precinct where the officers accused of killing George Floyd worked before they were fired on Tuesday. They pushed protesters back as the crowd grew a day after police fired rubber bullets and tear gas on thousands of demonstrators angered by the latest death of an African-American at the hands of U.S. law enforcement. Minneapolis Police Chief Medaria Arredondo cautioned protesters to remain peaceful. President Donald Trump, in a tweet, called Floyd's death sad and tragic, end quote, as outrage spread across the country over a bystander's cell phone video of his killing on Monday while in the custody of four white police officers. Well, all four have been fired. The prosecutor said that they had called in the FBI to help investigate the case, which could involve a federal felony civil rights violation. Quote, I would like those officers to be charged with murder because that's exactly what they did. Bridget Floyd, George Floyd's sister, said on NBC television. They murdered my brother. They should be in jail for murder. And Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey said he could not understand why the officer who held his knee to Floyd's neck on a Minneapolis street until the 46-year-old restaurant worker went limp has not been arrested. Quote, why is the man who killed George Floyd not in jail? if you had done it or I had done it, we would be behind bars right now, Frey had said, or Fry. Anyway, based on what I saw, the officer who had his knee on the neck of George Floyd should be charged, he said. The case was seen as the latest example of police brutality against African Americans, which gave rise 6 years ago to the Black Lives Matter movement. Floyd had been detained on a minor charge of allegedly using a counterfeit $20 bill to make a purchase at a convenience store. In the video, policemen hold him to the ground while one presses his knee on Floyd's neck. "Your knee in my neck, I can't breathe. Mama, mama," Floyd pleaded. He grew silent and motionless, unable to move, even as the officer told him to get up and get in the car. He was taken to hospital, where he was later declared dead. Calls for justice came from around the country. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden said the FBI needs to thoroughly investigate the case. It's a tragic reminder that this was not an isolated incident, but part of an ingrained systemic cycle of injustice that still exists in this country, Biden said. We have to ensure that the Floyd family receives the justice. Democratic Senator Kamala Harris called the policeman's using his knee on Floyd's neck torture, quote unquote. This is not new. It has been going on a long time. What our communities have known for generations, which is discriminatory implementation and enforcement of the laws, she said. He was begging to be able to breathe, she said. It was a public execution. The protest evoked memories of the riots in Ferguson, Missouri in 2014 after a policeman shot dead a young African-American man suspected of robbery, as well as the case of New Yorker Eric Garner, who was detained by police for illegally selling cigarettes and filmed and being held in an illegal chokehold by police that led to his death. How many more of these senseless excessive force killings from the people who are supposed to protect us can we take in America, said civil rights attorney Ben Crump, who was retained by Floyd's family. Now, Crump pointed out that the arrest involved a minor, nonviolent crime, and there was no sign, as police initially claimed, that Floyd resisted arrest. There was no reason to apply this excessive fatal force, Crump said. That has to be the tipping point. Everybody deserves justice. We can't have two justice systems, one for blacks and one for whites. So that's the perspective. And very interesting. Let's go on to something completely different. This time it's about corporate America. Boeing is going to resume production of its ill-fated 737 MAX planes. Boeing has resumed production of the 737 MAX at a low, quote-unquote, rate following two deadly crashes that led to the aircraft's global grounding by regulators, the company said yesterday. The jet hasn't flown commercially since March of 2019 and is still a number of key steps away from being cleared for service by the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration, among other regulators. Now, Boeing said work on the MAX had resumed at the company's Renton, Washington factory as it implements initiatives to enhance workplace safety and product quality. We've been on a continuous journey to evolve our production system and make it even stronger, said Walt Odisho, vice president and general manager of the 737 program. You know, I don't like to editorialize, but this is the sort of CRAP I've heard from corporate America for such a long time, and yet they don't resolve it. I don't even know why they're bringing this whole thing up again, when in reality that they haven't gotten all the administrative okays. Unbelievable. The aerospace giant had shut production down in January amid uncertainty over when regulators would clear the jet to fly again. Well, even before the hit from the coronavirus, the MAX crisis had cost Boeing billions of dollars in compensation for airlines and production expenses, including the cost to store more than 400 planes that could not be delivered to customers. Since that time, Boeing's troubles have deepened as the airline customers have been thrust into a fight for survival due to plunging travel demand from coronavirus shutdowns. Earlier on Tuesday, Boeing released details on a downsizing plan to cut total headcount by 10% or roughly 16,000 employees in all. Company said it approved 5,520 U.S. employees for voluntary layoff and was notifying another 6,770 staff members that they would be involuntarily let go. So it just is what it is, as they say. So let's just see what else is going on in our hemisphere. Bear with me a moment as I pull in the next pages. 1 second. Okay. Now let's look at what's going on in Latin America. The Latin American countries are facing an uphill battle against the COVID-19 pandemic. So while the COVID-19 pandemic appears to be coming under control in Asia and Europe, it continues to wreak havoc in Latin America. The World Health Organization has described this as a new epicenter. So Latin America is the new epicenter of COVID-19's pandemic, with infections and deaths set to substantially worsen in the coming weeks, the World Health Organization said Tuesday. So while Europe is slowly emerging from lockdown, Latin America is now the most affected place in the world, with terrible repercussions for both the economy and employment. South America has become a new epicenter for the disease. We are now seeing an increase in the number of cases in many South American countries, said Executive Director of the World Health Organization's Health Emergencies Program, Michael Ryan, at a virtual conference from Geneva. Well, Brazil, experiencing the most severe concentrations of deaths in Latin America. Chile, for its part, is on the brink of collapse, according to its president, while Ecuador and especially the city of Guayaquil are beginning to show signs of recovery. Well, in Brazil, populism and pandemics mix very poorly. With a population of 210 million, Brazil is now the second most affected country in the world behind the United States in number of confirmed cases. It is feared that the number of infections and deaths could be higher as the country has been slow to implement screening tests. Far-right populist President Jair Bolsonaro has been downplaying the epidemic since the beginning of the crisis. With his supporters, he has denounced the dictatorship of the coronavirus and has regularly refused to respect any social distancing. And during a meeting in the capital of Brasilia, on Sunday, he removed his mask, shook hands with as many people as possible, and to even carry a child on his shoulders. Well, to protect the population, however, local authorities have adopted containment measures against the advice of the president. Mexico has the second highest death toll in Latin America, with more than 6,000 deaths related to COVID-19. In spite of this, President Andrés Manuel López Obrador is already considering ending lockdown and claimed in a press conference that, quote, the pandemic has been tamed, end quote, allowing, quote, a return to a new normalcy. While he believes that social distancing must be maintained, his government has already begun working on how the country should emerge from lockdown. They have developed a four-color coding system depending on the intensity of the virus's circulation. Obrador wants to restart economic activity as soon as possible. The rush to a new normal is being delayed by the closure of the border with the United States, a trading partner on which Mexico is highly dependent. Well, the social distancing campaign has made it possible to smooth out the epidemiological curve so that hospitals are less saturated, but Obrador's eagerness to end lockdown risks provoking a second wave of contagion, Dr. Guillermo Torre of the Faculty of Medicine in Monterrey Institute of Technology and Higher Education said in an interview with the French daily Le Monde, which means the world. This is especially true since national governmental organizations, NGOs, have questioned whether the real number of cases is greatly underestimated in the country. Well, on March 16, when only 86 cases were officially registered, Peru was the first Latin American country to adopt restrictive measures in an attempt to contain the epidemic. But after 9 weeks of lockdown, infection figures exploded. Peru is now the second most affected country in Latin America after Brazil, and the third in terms of a number of deaths after Brazil and Mexico. Now, the spread, despite lockdown, is due to several factors. The first is the fragility of the Peruvian health system. More than 8,000 COVID-19 patients are hospitalized in Peru, but due to a combination of a lack of protective gear or equipment and failure to follow health safety protocols, the virus has spread rapidly among healthcare workers. At least 635 doctors and 1,200 nurses contracted the disease, and 33 healthcare workers have died. In addition, markets and banks have acted as vectors for circulating the virus. Clearing lockdown, the government was forced to maintain essential economic activities, including the sale of food and markets. The markets became a source of contamination until the government responded by closing them down. The same problem occurred with the banks, where Peruvians flocked to withdraw emergency aid vouchers. Well, the soaring number of infections can also be explained by the central role of the unofficial sector, which accounts for 70% of the country's activities. Thousands of people defied lockdown orders to feed their families. So that's the story there. And let me just see what we're going to do here, see if there's just anything else that we need to cover with you. One second. Don't think we were able to cover this with you yesterday. Evidently, Costa Rica became the latest country to legalize same-sex marriage early on Tuesday when a ruling from its Supreme Court went into effect, ending the country's ban. Couples held ceremony, mostly private, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but some that were broadcast celebrate their unions before judges and notaries after the ban was lifted at midnight. Well, two women in their 20s married after midnight in an outdoor service performed by a notary wearing a face mask and pronounced them wife and wife. Well, Costa Rica is the sixth country in Latin America to legalize same-sex marriage, following most recently Ecuador, which allowed it last year, and it is also permitted in some parts of Mexico. The issue took center stage in Costa Rica's 2018 presidential election after the Inter-American Court of Human Rights issued an opinion that countries like Costa Rica, which had signed the American Convention on Human Rights, had to move immediately to legalize gay marriage. It helped propel President Carlos Alvarado to victory over an evangelical candidate, Fabricio Alvarado, who had campaigned against him. Same last name, unrelated. Anyway, in August of 2018, Costa Rica's Supreme Court said that the country's ban was unconstitutional and gave the Congress 18 months to correct it, or it would happen automatically. The Legislative Assembly did not act, so at midnight, the law banning same-sex marriage was nullified. A campaign celebrating the change called I Do, end quote, planned a series of events, including hours of coverage on state television and messages from celebrities, including Michelle Bachelet, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights. Gia Miranda, the director of the I Do campaign, said that television coverage would also include segments on the movement's history in Costa Rica. Well, it gives us much joy, Miranda had said. Your one thing that could be, or could with this, falling in love. She said it would help decrease discrimination and make the country more prosperous and attractive to tourists. So
Let me just see what else is happening. Bear with me a moment. Bear with me one second here. I want to make sure that we've covered things with you. Bear with me one more second. I want to cover something else here. This is really quite interesting because I think you might find it interesting. Evidently, the sorrow in the Mediterranean region due to the virus has upended a lot of grieving rituals. So it's really overwhelming. So to greet friends and acquaintances by kissing, hugging, and shaking hands is considered part of the essence of Mediterranean identity. But the coronavirus pandemic has put an abrupt end to such rituals, with no indication over when it will be safe to resume them. Fear of spreading the virus has upended traditions as close physical contact suddenly became dangerous, even life-threatening. A fisherman by the name of Daniel Reggio used to hail friends and colleagues with a traditional bis or cheek kissing when he bumped into them in the southern French port city of Marseille. Since the spread of COVID-19, he had resorted to elbow bumping. Well, besides, one second here. Okay, yeah, that's what it is. I misplaced this. So a fisherman by the name of Daniel Reggio used to hail friends and colleagues with a traditional bis or cheek kissing when he bumped into them in the southern port city of Marseille. Since the spread of COVID-19, he has resorted to elbow bumping. We can't say we don't miss it, but going without isn't going to end friendships or complicity, said Reggio as he sold sea bream Marseille's historic old port area. Pensioner Yvonne Tapias organizes walking tours in Marseille. He now greets people with the Wuhan shake, a foot greeting, a greeting that harks back to the Chinese city where the novel coronavirus was first appeared. We teach each other, or we touch each other with our souls, he said, pointing to the inside of his foot. And people from the south need contact, Tapias had said. Indonesia actor Mohamed Werdeni said that the physical greeting was part of a regional one. And Indonesia actor Mohamed Werdeni said the physical greeting was part of regional traditions. We like to kiss each other 2, 3, or 4 times, depending on the region. If you very much try to push yourself, the bottom line is it's not going to work. And so that becomes a problem. Anyway, so it looks like kissing is really going to be out. And we're going to have to get used to the new normal. Anyway, that's the story here. Let me quickly look and see what we have scheduled for tomorrow. Yes, we'll be speaking with Nader Sayers, who will be speaking to us at 10 o'clock. He's the assembly member representing District 90, and we'll speak to him. So all the best to you. We're closing up a little bit earlier than normal, especially now that you know that Dr. Sayers will be with us tomorrow. He's the assembly member, and then we'll go from there. And so let me just say goodbye and wish you all a pleasant day. Goodbye.